Welcome to episode 211 of the Movie City Maniacs. On tonight's episode, our Noirvember series concludes with Touch of Evil from 1958. Welcome to the Movie City Maniacs. I'm Kyle.
I'm Metal as Nails Maddie.
And I'm Adam.
And yes, this is the end of our Noirvember series with a fitting film to end it, which many consider the end of the noir, I guess the genre, whatever it is.
Era. Let's go era.
Okay. Yeah. Touch of Evil. Orson Welles, I guess classic. Can we say classic? I think it's become a classic now, right? Touch of Evil from 1958.
I think even before the restoration, it's weird. So this movie, we'll get into it.
There was three options on the disc to watch, and I didn't know which one to went. So I'm like, you know what? Orson Welles won. I went with his
That's the one to watch.
The note.
Yeah.
I have before seen, gone into some of the other versions on a previous deep dive into this film many years ago, and I can't really say better or worse, but you can definitely feel like there's, because I never watched the whole movies, but you could definitely feel like there was something maybe missing.
Well, I think
the
theatrical cut, they cut out like 15 minutes, I want to say.
Or a little bit more, 15 minutes from the preview cut.
Yeah, and then there's another cut that, I forget what's different about that. So it definitely seems like they found like the Orson Welles cut. But some of the stuff is still gone, so some of them they had to make. Yeah,
it's not quite that. I'll break it down.
We can talk about
it
later.
I'll just do it quickly since we're here. So the theatrical cut. We can talk about why these things happen later. But the theatrical cut that goes out is cut to shit to somehow streamline it, which actually makes it more confusing as a plot. And they do it as a double feature. And it's an hour and a half. It's the second on a double feature. Basically, to just throw it away because they've had so many problems with it. Even though basically Welles tells them that they're going to have all these problems with it. In, I think it's the 70s, the movie still is wildly praised. In Europe mainly. Bombs in the US does well in Europe. In the 70s, they find what, unfortunately, the scholar that ends up correcting himself or critic, Rosenbaum, what he thinks is the Welles version, but it's the preview. It's just what they had assembled before
To show the suits.
After they'd already taken away from Welles.
Okay.
So there's footage in that, and there's footage in the restoration that he never shot. The restoration is taking his 58-page memo when he saw that cut and was like, "You guys have fucked a bunch of my shit up." We were already making this other movie, and then for a variety of reasons, he doesn't. This is what it should be. And in 1998, through them getting access to a lot of different footage and cuts, they were able to make it close to what he was going to do. The big thing about this movie is it never will be the exact movie that he intended.
So either some of the footage either wasn't shot or is lost, that they had to take stuff from the recut that he had nothing to do with just to make the story still make sense, or else you would lose.
I think there's only two instances of this, and they're pretty minor. One is Janet Leigh and Charlton Heston kissing. Do we really
was it hot?
They're still hot. Like that's still hot kiss. Right. It's in the car. Like they're both looking pretty good in this movie.
Okay, is Charlton doing like a blackface in this?
brown.
Okay, like, there is like there's something like offensive about
this. He's
supposed
to be Mexican, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So like, I watched like, oh, he definitely looks like Hal Johnson.
I couldn't tell if he's supposed to be brown face or he's supposed to just have a really.
Thank God this is in black and white.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't ever act in brown face in this. So, anyways, we'll get into Touch of Evil.
Yeah.
But those are the three versions. So, and we all watch the restoration, I hope.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the movie we're going to cover that was done in 98. So it's been a long time of that version.
Yeah. I guess before we jump into it, should we just do what we've been watching?
Of course.
Yeah.
Can I go? I took a day off, and it was a regular Saturday afternoon. I got off work probably around like 1, didn't have the kid.
How dare you?
I had 2 hours. So I'm like, I bought Glengarry Glen Ross about 12 years ago and probably about 15 years ago. It was when my wife first started dating. I bought it. Like, I
and you had not
this.
Seen it? You just bought it?
You've never seen the movie?
I watched it. Yeah, I've seen it. I watched yours. I bought it on DVD. I'm like, I'm going to watch this. Amazing. This is going to be a good 15 years go by. I still like, it's still in like the cellophane wrap. So I'm like, all
that's
right,
crazy.
Let's check this out, man. Like, I love this movie. That movie blew my mind again. The first time you watched, like, this movie's awesome. The second you watched, like, everybody in this is doing their best to play these 6-7 characters, and they are all on.
It's an acting display.
Fire, like Al Pacino as this like hotshot salesman who, unbeknownst to him, is seducing this fella who's just kind of this schlub. Who I don't know if you guys have seen this recently or no.
No, not in a while.
Okay, this is just a theory that I had. He's at a bar. He's drinking right before the Alec Baldwin sales meeting. He doesn't show up. He's just sitting doing a sale with this guy. And as he's chatting with him, this guy has this look of lust in his eyes. And this is like a 94 movie, so like it seems a bit.
Is it 94? Is that like?
I'm just guessing right now.
92.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, this is kind of like they don't say anything, but the only reason he made this sale is because he is inadvertently flirting with this guy. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, that's actually kind of like an interesting.
I took it as that as he like he's just like not looks up to this guy, but this guy is just like a king to him. Like, he's just such a smooth talker. He's like,
there is such
you, need,
a
you want this?
Lust.
I got it for you. You need young women? I got it. Like, he pretty much says, like, if you need fucking a
but
young
when
child,
he starts
I'll
talking about, like, thrusting the woman, he's like doing like his Al Pacino. Yeah. And he's talking about the sexual. You can tell he kind of like sits up in his seat straighter. I'm like, okay. Like, it's so subtle. And then when he comes in the next day, he's a little bit hungover and dejected. And you can kind of tell, like, his wife's like, you can't buy this off of this guy. Like, it's such a, yeah.
So I actually did, like, readings of this.
Oh, get out of here.
So that was my first.
Al Pacino impression? Did you just read it as, like, him in Heat?
So who knows what it was. But, I believe I did a Pacino scene and I did a Lemon scene.
There is something about.
You had to do it, like, you had to pick
two guys,
two
to go
different
in.
Characters in the same thing, and I had done that, and I'd covered it even in. So I wrote something about this for my OAC high school, the movie though, in drama, but it was like it's almost like line by line what's supposed to be in the play. I think except for Baldwin. Baldwin's not in the play. That character doesn't exist in the play, I'm pretty sure.
Because this movie is so quotable. Like, you could, like, even, like, that one guy, Alan Arkin.
Oh, yeah.
He is such, like, he's just, like, a guy who's just going along with it for the ride. But when he's getting in, like, these Gestapo tactics, you can't talk to a man like that. And I'm like, that is such a great line read. And it's so.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's one of those films where it has, like, 5 or 6 great actors, and everyone gets their equal time to shine. Like, you could say anyone was the best.
Spacey's great in this, too.
Yeah, everyone, yeah.
He just plays the put-upon boss manager. Yeah.
And that Baldwin scene that has been that's all he's in the movie.
Yeah.
5 minutes. And, like, the thing is, you have no compassion for any
when
of these
guys. When
someone
shoots him on set, that will be what they play at his funeral, will be the scene from this movie.
Always be closing. That's pretty good, actually.
Sorry, I took a Maddie space right there.
Who are you? Fuck you. That's who I am. I'm the guy who drove the $40,000 Mercedes out front.
Yeah, I'm kind of dying to watch it.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. It's one of them things, like, at the minute it ended, I'm like, I could watch this again. And, like, you could quote it. You probably haven't seen this movie in 20 years. I still say a quote. You're like, I know that quote.
Well, we had done The Lady Vanishes right on the show for a few years ago. Yeah. And I'd cut a music video for our band to that movie. And I cut it up. And I was like, I need a break from this because it kind of fucked me up in liking it. That was Glengarry, because I had basically in the span of 3 years – I'd wrote this paper. I'd acted these two scenes. I'd watched the movie. And
you're really
I really had like
You're all about
every
the leads.
Scene. Yeah, it was all about every single lead in the movie that I knew I needed a break. And I saw that you had had registered that on Letterboxd. I went, fuck, I'd love to see that movie again.
This is top 100 for me.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, it is so good.
And have you guys done much more Mammoth?
What else has he done?
I think like
he's got
House of Games, Heist, Spartan.
Maybe I haven't.
Don't
then.
Know actually.
I believe does someone else direct this one?
It's directed by James Foley.
Yeah, but it's Mammoth. Like,
yeah.
There's no line.
He just did the play. But the question I was thinking about this is, even though like Lemming is like he's almost like a grandfather character when he wants to be. He puts on this like charm about you see, and now like they're all still pieces of garbage. Like, they're all about chasing that dollar and just like selling these people like bills of sale. Like,
they
are so bad people. So it's kind of hard to feel any like
remorse
sympathy,
for the
but you still kind
for where it's going
do
now.
Like when like he falls apart, like even
because you see why he's led his life in that way.
Yeah, because he was the Al Pacino character 20
but
years
the Al Pacino
ago.
Character
yeah
you know it's history repeating on mm-hmm. on if you make these mistakes, but it's the kind of pressures of everything that we have in our lives and the way that our lives are now set up, and this is the 90s, but it would still apply to now.
Yeah.
They're going to make you make some of these fucking decisions that are bad.
For every, not just for you, but for like
and it'll get
society.
You. Yeah. So what are you going to give it, Matt?
I mean, I don't know, 9. Like it's fantastic.
Yeah. I you might have sold me watching this one over the next month.
Is it a Christmas movie? Or no?
I don't know. It's hard to say because there's only like a few scenes that happen outside of like that
at
office.
The
like they're
and,
in the bar and whatnot. And I was thinking there is one lady in that scene, the girl who takes a coat when they walk into the bar, and that's pretty much it.
I think it's a winter movie, but
yeah, because it's blustery outside, but it's more rainy than it is.
Yeah,
winter.
Like I don't know. Like no, is it in November? I don't know. Yeah. It doesn't feel Christmassy to me.
It depends on how depressed you want to be this Christmas.
Yeah.
So what else you guys watch?
I'll be really quick here. Yeah. I did Men at Work for 1990.
That's the Sheen and the Mastiff,
yes,
Emilio,
this is written,
right?
Directed and starring Emilio Estevez. I don't know, man. I fucking love
is
90s
there,
Emilio
there's
Estevez.
There's toxic waste in this movie, right?
Yeah. So, yeah.
He did definitely have like a presence. I don't know if. What would be the ultimate Emilio Estevez?
For me, the
Repo
Young Guns
Man.
Films, but...
I was going to say Repo Man, but hey.
Yeah, Repo Man's
I don't know if he was... So, this may be... I don't know if he was ever really utilized as an actor as well as maybe he should have been with, I think, the actual...
I guess, like, Coach Bombay was probably, like, his payday.
Yeah. But, like, that's...
Yeah.
That's fine, but, like, I think he's got more to offer...
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is the movie that's got more, because I don't think I've ever seen this.
Oh, no? So, yeah, him and Charlie Sheen are garbage men. They got dreams to open up a surf shop. And the first, like, 20 minutes or so is just so fun. It's like just these slacker guys on the job. Mm. It's them doing the garbage, but they're having fun. They're rolling the bowling ball in the garbage, knocking the... It's just like...
Yeah.
Almost like a hangout teen romp kind of film with these two slacker guys. You know, Charlie Sheen's checking out the hot women across the, you know, the street with his goggles, being a pervert. There's one woman that's kind of high, so he's kind of checking on. But anyways, yeah. And then there's a side plot where this businessman has been, like you mentioned, dumping the waste into the lake.
I love 90s like toxic waste. There is something so nostalgic and charming that like any movie that has like a vat of toxic waste that they're trying to get rid of.
It's got to be green.
It's green. It's got to be oozy or neon.
Oh, yeah. Like, maybe some neon red, neon yellow, neon orange.
Ninja Turtles,
with
RoboCop, Men at Work, Toxic Avenger. Like, there are so many great movies about green.
So you've also seen Men at Work.
Yeah.
So, yeah, anyways, there's a counselor. He's going to be the next mayor, possibly. He's been knowing about this going on, but now it's maybe got too far and he wants out. So he's got to get knocked off. And he accidentally, like, switches tapes with the woman that works at his office. And she's the hot girl across the street from Charlie Sheen. So he's there and he comes into her house, storms in, and Charlie Sheen thinks he's an abusive boyfriend or something. So he shoots him with the BB gun and then hides. You know, he's laughing with Emilio Estevez. And while this happened, he gets knocked off. And then the next day, he ends up in a barrel. The barrel ends up whatever in the garbage, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And they find the body and they think that, you know, maybe they were responsible for killing him. Keith David is like... I guess the guy that's running the garbage man's office, son, or somehow he's a relative, and he's a hard ass. He's from NAM or whatever, and he's stuck with these two fucking slackers, so they don't get along. But then, you know, whatever, he hates fucking cops, and he's going to help him deal with this body. It's kind of stupid. Doesn't make much sense, but it's just Keith David having fun. It's all them just having fun.
That's exactly what this is.
You get to,
if you think about plot too much, it kind of ruins.
You get
the movie.
Dean Cameron in there from Summer School, and he did those ski movies. He's in there as a pizza boy, and he ends up getting involved now because he saw too much with the body. And yeah, it's pretty much them trying to get rid of the body, but then trying to find out who actually murdered. Anyways, I find that's where it lost me. I love like the first chunk where it's just these slackers having fun. I would have rather just saw not had the toxic waste.
If it
and
was
the plot.
Just like Dude Where's My Car with Emilio Estevez.
But I think doesn't Dude Where's My Car even get into a plot?
I have no idea.
I think that film has like a whole crime plot too. I find that's what I struggle. Like, just give me a comedy.
Just give me the beginning of Dude Where's My Car.
Yeah. I always struggle when comedies go off into this silly crime. Like, they always try to, like, why do you don't need that? Just have
like
these two
Fletch.
Guys.
Like, God damn it.
Well, Fletch is a detective. I think it's different, but what's that one Date Night? Like, same thing. All these movies try to go off and do something. Just have these two guys, make it a teen romp. These guys work in the garbage and the hijinks they're having.
They're trying to
Have them try to score or whatever. I would have rather saw that movie. I'm having a blast the first bit. I'm like, this is so much fun. I forgot about this movie. I'm so glad I'm watching this. And then when they get into that kind of stuff, it lost me. I'm going to still give it 6.5 out of 10, but yeah, like once you get into, I don't care about this. Well, you're getting into action scenes now with them, and it's
garbage
like, this
men.
Is like kind of stupid. But yeah, when it's just Charlie Sheen, Emilio Estevez, and Keith David, so much fun there.
So we're right in noir territory. So I watched noir from Joseph H. Lewis, who's done the big combo, My Name is Julia Ross, and Gun Crazy, a movie I'd seen a million years ago that I would like to rewatch that I really liked. I liked the big combo last year. I did not like So Dark the Night. It's basically this detective. He's this Paris detective. And everyone is trying to be very French.
Like, are you talking like offensive?
Like, no. Like, it's just like distracting how they're be like supposed to be like, just so you know, it's French. And now we're
sitting there eating frog legs and like smoking cigarettes. And,
it's not stereotypical. It's just like there's something off-putting about how they're trying to like set up this fake Frenchness with everything that's going on here. Never in an offensive way, just in a, like an annoying way.
Yeah.
So it's a detective. He's supposed to be this great detective that solved all these amazing crimes. He's going to go to the countryside and rest because he needs some rest after what's going on. And he gets there and he's in an inn and kind of the setup's good. I never really buy the detective for whatever reason. He's a character actor, Steve Gary, that's been in a bunch of movies that I've liked. And he's usually good in them. Spellbound, In a Lonely Place, but I don't think he's got the chops for the lead. He's not Peter Lorre.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, there's a woman and a man that get killed. There's a bunch of stuff that is personal to him, and he can't figure out who the killer is. I'm not going to go further into it. Where it goes is stupid. It so sucks. Oh, the acting's pretty fucking bad in this one. And I just found it like dry in an unengaging way. Like, if you got to give me the characterization, unfortunately for Lewis, the director, who I think does an amazing job with this. All the suspense is great, but then when the story takes you, sucks. And then when you have to deal with the characters reading their dialogue, it sucks. But every time there's a sequence that he has to pull through, it's
where it comes alive.
Awesome. It comes alive, and it's so interesting. It's just he's let down by every other aspect. And I guess this is probably another cheapy made, and you can only do so much on the budget sometimes.
Tabernacle.
I'm going to go 5.5.
Sank. Wow. Sank point sank.
Yeah, sank point sank. It's not even a French fucking movie. Like, it's so weird. The fake French, I never expected that to bother me so much. Maybe I saw Rafifi last week, and then I went, what the fuck is this bullshit? Yeah. Which was also made by an American who in that movie plays an Italian, and he pulls off both directing French and playing an Italian.
Yeah.
You can do it all, folks. You just can't if you're not going to commit to it all.
Really lean into that French.
So for the rest of this episode, there's going to be a lot of uh-huh-huhs, and just so you know, because we're going to lean into it.
Have you guys heard of Isuzu? It's pretty
much... she's got those pedals.
Pretty good, actually. No, it's pretty much it's a bunch of Nazis. The war's kind of dying down.
Oh, yes,
down.
Yes, yes, yes.
These Nazis... I guess we're at this day and age.
This is a 2023 movie, right?
Yeah, you got it. I watched it. It's a new one. It's part of that whole like they wronged the wrong fella. Like,
yes,
it's kind of deal. Like, so okay, this guy's coming back. It's one of them movies, like John Wick. There should be a whole genre of like.
I think there is.
They pissed off the wrong guy.
I think
it started with Take and Liam Neeson.
Maybe? Yeah. No, I would say it started with Charles Bronson.
Oh yeah, 80s.
Yeah, like Bronson is.
Yeah,
the
I guess Death Wish disappeared for a bit there. I think it's kind of come back in the.
So this is one of the things, but we're at this day and age where like there's this traveling band of Nazis. The war is kind of over, and they're just going around the countryside, raping and pillaging.
Yeah,
and we're at this age where like, listen, just give me Nazis. You don't have to make them rapey Nazis. Like, what are you doing to us? Like, guys. They're Nazis. Just keep them as Nazis. Like I don't need to.
So
hate
is it
them
graphic?
More.
Is that
it's one of them things? Like okay, I get it. Like it starts off with showing how bad these guys are.
Yeah.
And this guy, he's digging for gold and whatnot. He finds some gold. He's trying to travel, and shit goes down, and they cross paths, and he just goes on this spree trying
now,
to take
to be
out these
crazy,
Nazis.
Crazy the violence.
The violence is insane. But that being said, it gets so boring and like so like. Okay, I get it. You're just trying to think of creative ways to kill Nazis. Okay, cool. The lead character has maybe 10 words of dialogue, and that's it. Like, okay, I need something a bit more out of this.
You need 50 like Rambo.
Yeah, like an hour
Do
and a half.
Do you hear how they fix Rambo?
No.
So the first cut of Rambo, Stallone saw it and was like, can I buy this back?
Like the first, like First Blood?
Yeah, so the first cut of First Blood, he's like, can I buy this back? This is going to fuck me. It's going to ruin everything. And he had a lot riding on this because it
that's his...
had not been going well, like the post-Rocky, you know, he needed a hit. And I guess he saw that and they weren't going to sell it back to him. But what he realized is if he cut all of his dialogue down to the bare minimum...
Huh.
They could make a good movie because everything around him, it was the dialogue that was shitty. Like the whole time he was filming, he was like, what the fuck? I'm having these. But and give him credit to this. He realized, like, I don't need to say anything. People are going to get the context of all these different.
Maybe that, like, the end scene where he's like, they drew First Blood, Sergeant. Like that one.
That's probably, like, what they could not take it. I haven't watched First Blood in a million years.
Yeah, of course.
But,
that's great.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, imagine thinking you're an actor, and it was his production partner or somebody else that was working with him. They want to buy the movie so they can bury it.
Oh,
never release it. That was their first option.
Oh, they're like, wait, well, we could probably cut this.
First Blood Christmas movie, just throwing it out there.
Oh, well, yeah. So every action movie is a Christmas movie, yeah. Essentially.
Yeah. Well, yeah, if you look at
Lethal Weapon, Rambo
has.
Yeah, maybe I've been interested since I've seen, because I haven't seen First Blood.
Well, the original ending too is I'm sure everyone knows by now the original
ending.
He gets
killed, right? Like,
well, I think he commits suicide.
Yeah.
So, anyways, yeah. Zuzu wasn't
not First
fun.
Blood.
It wasn't for me. It was not First Blood. I got like to a point where like, okay, now you're just getting ridiculous. But I guess I signed up for this. Fair
right.
enough.
Like this film was really well regarded.
I know. I
think it's like 90 something.
I was hoping.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was hoping to have like it's just a
people love like John Wick.
Yeah.
Like, I like John Wick, but
I like
people love
John
like
Wick.
John Wick on another level.
It's
think.
Pretty much the 90 minutes of this Malik killing. You're like, okay.
I don't know if critics like it. Where's this 90 on?
I'm just looking. I just searched this movie now. Imagine 94% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, like that seems high compared to a lot of. Like that seems high. Like 94%. Like not that they could all be middling reviews too.
Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes sucks.
I'm good at 5.
Oh wow. Yeah,
3.3 on Letterboxd.
Yeah, I'm not watching.
Yeah, that's TV. Closer to Maddie's rating. But what do you watch, Kyle?
I got two here. I'm going to be really quick because I don't have as much to say. I did the documentary. I've been wanting to watch this. I grew up, I don't know if you guys grew up with the American Gladiator.
Oh, yeah,
oh,
totally.
Yeah, 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 you watch this, eh?
So
this is my like thing more than wrestling. So yeah. American Gladiators, I can't remember if it played first or second.
I feel like it was first.
Okay, so whatever. It was first.
Yeah. It's like Saturday morning, there was the cartoons.
Yes.
And then around 10 or 11.
All on Fox.
This started, and then wrestling after it, I think.
So I never missed this unless I had a hockey game.
Mm-hmm.
Where wrestling, sometimes I would be like, I've had enough of wrestling. I fucking love this.
Wrestling was
two scoops.
On Saturdays.
Two scoops. The guy that won the 1 year, mm-hmm. like I was all fucking about Two Scoops. I talked about Two Scoops for like 2 years later. He's just an average guy that won fucking American Gladiators.
I think I'm the same way. Like I think it didn't help though that the Saturday morning wrestling kind of sucked.
Yeah, it's Superstars was terrible.
I think I got into wrestling more in the 2000 Raw era.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, so this is a 5-part documentary called Muscles and Mayhem, an unauthorized story of American Gladiators that Netflix put out this year. It's unauthorized, but they got pretty
everybody,
much everyone.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the first...
Dip Butkus before he died?
They didn't interview him for this before he died, did they?
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know who that
Dick
is.
Dick Butkus was one of the announcers on the show. He's a football player.
I don't think so.
He's in Hang Time.
He's Hang Time, coming together.
Yeah, I don't know
no?
who that is. But so the first episode goes into like how it started, how the games were like shit and super dangerous for people. Like
yeah, people were like hurting themselves.
Oh, yeah. Like, and they had no one there. Like they didn't have all the doctors on site. Mm-hmm. So if you got injured, they might like wrap you up in a bandage and throw you back out
right.
there. And then the second episode goes into more of like the American Gladiators we know and love and how that's born. And you're starting to see the games. It's just so fun watching
Turbo.
And be like, oh, that game was so, yeah.
It's Powerball. Evolve, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, then they do that Skyfall or whatever, right?
And Nitro, it's kind of like Nitro's the main, like they have everyone there, but he's kind of the main guy. Yeah. But a lot of the other people.
What about Iceman?
Is Iceman?
I think they talked about him, but like again, a lot of these guys.
Did you watch this too?
Yeah, yeah, I watched it a while back, and
it's
they
like
were
Laser Nitro.
On drugs a lot.
Oh yeah, they talk
drugs.
About the funny thing is like it's like the shocking. It's not really that shocking.
Yeah.
It's like
they did
a lot of roids. We thought there's some funny stories where they tie when he's roided out
and they're like
and
kicking
the
shit
out
of
each
other. Then they go
to
like an all-you-can-eat buffet afterwards, like all like bloody and shit.
Or the
like,
one guy is roided out and he's pissed that he feels the call was uncalled for by the referee. So he's chasing the referee all throughout the stadium and they have to stop the show
so,
for like 20
like,
minutes.
I love this game so much. I used to set up Powerball in my basement.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think that's why it's popular. Right?
Well,
I think we all did.
But the length of this has held me.
I think
back.
I think that is a problem.
They probably could have done it in like two episodes.
It could have been an hour and a half documentary film. Like you didn't need to be
2 hours.
I feel
two,
like doc, I feel like
some odd minutes.
I feel
or something?
Like a lot of these documentaries, like they don't need to be 5 episodes, an hour and a half, 2 hours.
100%.
And again, I feel like, I'm a huge fan, so I was like, I'm okay with this. Like, they pretty much spent an episode on merch and how they got fucked in that. That could have been a 10-minute, 5 minutes of a documentary. I'm okay with it because I'm like, oh, I want to see these toys in the toy commercials and the video games. But yes, I could understand people have been like, if you're not really into this, it might not work as well. They got fucked on merch. Like, they pretty much got no money for merch. And they go to, I guess, MGM Samuel Goldwyn. He's known for he does not renegotiate.
Mm.
So they just went to him. They just did a 150-show tour. They're tired. They haven't got any money. They were making like $500 a week. This is when they're like the top-rated show on there. They go to him to renegotiate.
And they would just replace them.
Well, that's what they did. Goldwyn's replaced the four biggest Nitro. The four biggest ones says, see you guys later.
Yeah.
And the thing is,
and that's where the show kind of started going downhill.
Kind of, but I don't know if it actually did. I think it eventually just it's just going to wear out. Like, it's not actually that great of a competition. Like, from being a sports fan, when you start watching the patterns of these shows, and even the contestants knew the patterns of how you had to play it, it started becoming boring because the contestants were. Wasn't because Nitro wasn't on there stopping them.
See, I don't know. For me, it was like, I remember watching it and liking certain guys, and it got to the point they talked about it where it's like, you no longer had stars of show. They had like 20 gliders, and you didn't even know who any of these people were because it's like every episode it'd be like, I don't even know who this, I've never heard it. Yeah. Like, I remember kind of like,
I always voted for the contestant more than the gladiators.
Yeah, and I think that became a later thing, though. Like, they started...
Two Scoops was on like when Nitro was going, and like he was second
did
season.
Did he become a gladiator?
He might have. Hmm. No, I don't think he was.
I know when they brought it back, somebody like, my favorite became. Thing watching where there's some guy called Wolf or something, and he had like this lion's mane hair.
I'm surprised they haven't tried to do it bigger and
well. They did. They
better.
Did. They had it in the 2000s.
Yeah,
Hulk
Hogan like
hosting.
I guess it just doesn't work.
Nah.
Well, the problem is they talk about it. It became the ninja. What's that one?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
All those shows are pretty much American Gladiators, right?
Yeah,
like,
that
they're
makes
doing
sense.
That.
Yeah, but those were like crazier in like obstacle. It didn't need any gladiators. The problem is the gladiators can fuck you up and probably cause damage for the rest of your life.
Yeah, and me, like, I only wanted to see the obstacle course. That's why, like, Double Trouble was cool. We just want to see them.
Yeah.
Go down these shit.
But like
I love the one with the guns.
Oh yeah,
like, yeah.
As
the
a Nerf
obstacle
gun
course
guy.
Is cool. Like that's what you like.
I like
this.
The one where they're climbing the pyramid.
Yeah,
and then they get to
the
top.
The one with
off.
The balls, like when you had like put the
Power
balls
ball.
In the.
No, that was
that
fun.
Sucked.
I
had, like
that.
The
no,
hamster
I love,
balls.
That's where people
that sucked,
got really
like,
injured every time, and that's where that's where the gladiators always got pissed.
Yeah,
that's where like a fight was always going to start during that event.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And jousting, of course.
Jousting
was fun.
Yeah, I don't know. I liked a lot of.
No, I like the events. The end. Often was like the guy already was gonna win, and then they brought that thing where you had to like power your way up to the top. That was kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I liked all
I
that.
I always wanted to do all these. Like, to me, I never understood why someone didn't take all those, and maybe it is because of injuries.
Yeah,
take all these things. The rock climbing one is super fun too, but have all these in an arena and you pay 20
no,
bucks
you're
to
gonna
them.
Fuck people up for sure.
Yeah,
what was the Nickelodeon show?
It was Double Trouble, wasn't it?
Like, no, afterwards, where the kids had to be in events and they were always filled with. They had Velcro on their arms.
Yeah.
They had to go through the things that looked like Kush balls. And we need to look that shit up. That I wanted to be on so goddamn much.
I actually
much.
Watched that. Like somehow I came across. And I was like, I remember this. And they have some full episodes on YouTube. And I watched the full episode like three.
It was kids basically. There was no gladiators beating the shit on them. But they had to go
the
through all
thing.
These.
Yeah, and they would
stuff.
Win like a TV you could win and like
and
headphones.
Like, I would do so well at this. And I remember doing a Science Olympics. I guess I was in elementary school and I went to York University for a Science Olympics and there was two random things, but most of the science stuff was just like how can you build the greatest equation. I don't fucking know. How was I in Science
boring
Olympics?
Nerds,
yeah, like nerd stuff.
American Gladiators, how much ass do they kick?
But they did one where you had to answer the science question and then do sports things, but they were related to the sports things.
Yeah.
I killed because nobody else knew how to shoot.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like
a bunch of science nerds.
That's the closest I ever fucking got to being on one of these shows. Was like, okay, now you have to jump over this thing, and then you have to shoot in the midair because that is a gravity equation. So you had to do the gravity equation.
You had to get all the tags in that show that were hidden throughout the obstacles, so you could not bother to get that tag. But that tag might have been a TV.
Yes,
so
and it was like
you
a
had
house.
To decide.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it not?
No, it's not
Splat?
Anyways, the only other thing I want to add is, the executives kind of come off as assholes. The gladiators actually...
Surprising.
I was surprised that the gladiators all came off as likable, and you kind of felt bad how they got fucked. Like, I was worried it was going to go into, like, this guy is now fucking prostituting to get his cocaine, and thankfully it doesn't, like, it sounds like Nitro, they all went through troubled times, but, like, they all look pretty good now, and they seem like, I don't know, I was kind of...
What about the ones that are dead? Did they show
Well, yeah, there's a couple that they didn't show, so maybe those guys went down that path. It doesn't go down that path, thankfully. And I was also like, it kind of hit me on an emotional moment for certain parts, which I was kind of surprised about, because I'm a heartless bastard, that there's a couple months where he's talking about, you know, going to the, you know, the, what's that thing, the wish thing, and there was an, even the stuff with
the
laser with his father.
Getting separated from his mom?
Yeah, that too. Like, there's some stuff that they, I don't know. I'm going to give it 7.5, just because I'm a huge Gladiator fan. I think if you're not a Gladiator fan and you're just watching this as a doc, probably like a 6.
Is there a way
to,
like... I just don't want to watch the whole length, but I love American Gladiators.
To be fair, though, I think it is like some episodes are like just over a half an hour, some are 40.
But
I think it's like 3 hours total or just over 3 hours.
Yeah, it might be just over 3 hours.
Yeah.
That seems too long.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, again, I was just going, this was like my nostalgia. It's like I'm kind of getting to watch these events without having to go back and watch them.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
I might rather watch like season two of American
I actually have a DVD.
Like the best of
Shell Factory
two.
Put out. It's like the first, I think it's, again, it's because the first half of the season is where it sucked. It's the second half of season one, and I have that complete thing on DVD. So it's like 6 hours.
But I think it's season two where they really
I think this is right before, which that's why I'm kind of pissed. I don't think it sold well. I was hoping they at least would have got to like
that's
a
like the SCTV thing where I wanted all of them, and I never bought any of them because they stopped, and I just...
SNL, same thing.
Yeah.
They only did the first, like, you know, 4 or 5. But I'm just going to really quick, I'm just going to follow up because I don't have much to say about this, but I did watch again. I've been trying to get these classics from 1902, the short French short by George Melies. Trip to the Moon. Mm. Not much to say about
There's not many 1902 movies.
These astronomers, astronomers blast off to the moon. The famous scene, of course, where the ship's like a bullet and it hits the moon's eye. I'm a big Smashing Pumpkins fan, or I was. Back in the day, and they did Tonight Tonight, which is pretty much this redone.
Yeah, and the directors of Tonight Tonight are kind of, they've done other stuff now. Keep talking.
But yeah, there's not much. Just they land on this planet, they face off some aliens where they hit them and they turn into smoke. It's like, it's just this cool, visually impressive short. It's like, is it 10, 15 minutes long? There's cool effects for the time. There's not much to say, but I don't even know how you rate something like this. I'm going to give it like 7 out of 10, 7.5, because there's nothing to this, but it is kind of like a cool product of its time.
Oh, they did Little Miss Sunshine.
Okay.
The directors of the...
To be fair, I'm like, I would almost rather watch the Tonight Tonight, just because you get the awesome song, and it's like this redone, but with color, and the special effects are a little bit better, but it is like literally the same thing. Like even when they hit the creatures with the umbrella.
I actually did a back and forth. I think actually some of the effects are better in the 02 one. Like practical stuff is like cooler. But I agree. If you're going to tell me which one I'm going to watch, I'm probably going to watch the other one because it's just like a fucking earworm at the same time.
And they cut out like any of the stuff, like the beginning where it's the astronomers talking and, you know, Tonight just goes to these people. They jump in the bullet. They go to the planet.
A brilliant fucking thing to do as a musical.
I love, like, all the effects are impressive, though. Like, when they jump in the bullet and it goes, like, it's all really well done, and it just looks great the way they used...
It is virtually the other video.
Yeah.
Like, the music video, the Tonight Tonight music video.
Yeah.
I had to watch it... maybe I do a thing where I compare the two in school? I might have. Like, I was such a massive Pumpkins fan that I had done that.
Yeah.
Where'd you, is that, that's probably just anywhere right now.
It's actually Criterion has it. The strange thing is they only have, I guess, there was a colorized version that got lost and they found it. And then the ones that they couldn't find, that the scenes they've recolorized. So,
oh, interesting.
Which I don't know if I liked. I wanted to watch the black and white, but the black and white I could only find on YouTube, and it wasn't as good quality, so.
But it was supposed to be like this, like, wasn't a lot like they envisioned it as a
Yeah, like I think they released it both ways.
Yeah.
But again, to do color back then, you took pretty much the black and white film and literally colored each frame by frame. So it kind of like...
But isn't that crazy to think
about? That's kind of insane, right?
Like, but it also means it kind of like it's blurry. Like the colors kind of like... blur into I don't know. I would rather just watch black and white if that's the case. I don't know. But
black and white, right?
Yeah. Anyways, what else did you guys watch?
I watched They Won't Believe Me from 1947. This is another noir. I love noirs that basically start with a guy like, so what happened? And like, and then he has to fucking tell the story in whatever way.
It's usually at a CD bar or at a cop station.
Maybe this is why I like Dewey Cox so much as well. Like you got. I hate biopics, but I like how noir has to take in the fucking. This is my downfall. You want to hear my downfall? Here we go. And this is basically a guy played by Robert Young, who I only knew really from Secret Agent, which is a Hitchcock movie in the 30s. And this is now like late 40s. And he's on the stand, and they're basically saying he's a terrible person. He's committed murder, blah, 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 all this kind of stuff. And then they tell the story about how basically he was married. He was in love with this one woman. He didn't leave her because he wanted his wife's money. And then he meets a woman, Susan Hayward, who is so good in this, who basically plays a femme fatale in this, who's like fun. She's having a great time. But she also wants him to move away with her. And then a series of events cause him to – he's done all this fucking shitty things to everybody, but now he has to do really shitty things. But none of it is really directly his – fault, except it is, right? Like, and you go through all of how this would be his fault. But there's a lot of great set pieces. All the actors are great. Susan Haywood is really great. Jane Greer, who is in Out of the Past, plays like a smaller role, but is excellent in this. I just like, I love these movies that like how they're spinning these yarns. It's a yarn, man. And I don't necessarily love the ending. I gotta say, it's pulled me out a little teensy bit. And also, I don't know if the yarn is like top tier yarn, but it's directed so well by Irving Pichel, who I've The Most Dangerous Game is the only movie I've seen from the 30s. Like, I think he had a wayward career, but like, I kind of feel like he knew he was onto something. And Robert Young is fucking great in this. I'm gonna give it. I think I'm going to give it an 8.
What was the name of this one again?
They Won't Believe Me. Because he's telling this story and he's basically like...
Yeah, you won't believe me.
You won't believe me. I'm not guilty even though I'm guilty, but what the fuck is going... Like, and all the set pieces are really great, and how they draw it out is excellent. Another movie where every side character is like one of these 40s fucking heroes.
That sounds actually kind of awesome.
Yeah, I think you guys would dig it.
Quick question for you guys. I was thinking about this in biopics, how much I despise them and how much you despise them. Would Goodfellas be considered a biopic?
So Goodfellas is like this movie. Mm-hmm. Goodfellas is like a recollection. Maybe recollections.
Raging Bull is a biopic, right?
Yeah, like... yeah, so there's kind of biopic. I think biopics where they try to encompass the whole... the whole life of somebody is what I.
But that's Goodfellas, right? Like that's like ever since he was a young kid, he wanted to be.
But I think with that one, it's a recollection, and it's also
It's not his story. It's pretty
I think
much,
crime biopics are different, though.
Yeah, you might
like,
be right. Yeah,
a drama where it's like a singer, celebrity biopics. Those kind of have a different feel than like these other.
That's probably where the case is.
Kind of,
if it's like a criminal biopic, like you're in.
Well, it's also because it's usually about something that's more than about the guy's life.
Yeah. Like Zodiac could technically, like all those crime things too are kind of. I mean, Zodiac isn't following a real reporter, is it? It's more of.
No, he
wrote the book, right?
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
But it's not his bio. Like, it has elements of his life.
Yeah, I think there's true. Yeah.
But like Goodfellas definitely like what that Henry Hill's life just. Laid out before, but yeah, you're right. Like,
yeah, I don't know. I think the difference is if it's a crime or like if it's a
just like a
drama of a celebrity's life. I think it's usually a celebrity that you guys probably have. But you guys, I guess, have problems with like other biopics as well, right?
Yes,
like, probably like Malcolm X. Do you have a problem with that?
I've never seen Malcolm
Hoffa
X.
Hoffa. Or...
I've never seen Hoffa.
Okay. Hoffa I didn't like.
I like Hoffa.
That's the one with
Jack Nicholson.
And who's the little fella? Was Dave DeVito in that?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, Danny DeVito.
Anyways, yeah, that's just something I was thinking about today.
Not a biopic, but I watched, I guess this counts as a neo-noir. I didn't realize that. I thought it was going to be more like a movie about playing cards, which I love, you know.
Yeah, like Rounders. Actually,
Rounders, a gambler. So I think you watched this last year for the first time, maybe, or early this year. Paul Thomas Anderson's Heartache.
Oh, yeah. I really dug this one.
Yeah, and I think I watched it the year before that.
Okay. So yeah, this stars Phil Baker Hall, John C. Reilly, Gwyneth Paltrow, Sam Jackson, Philip Seymour Hoffman makes an appearance in there as well.
I love it.
Yeah, I love that scene. Yeah, I remember tying Maddie.
Kind of all these guys in their prime, either that or starting out like young. But yeah, it opens up with Phil Baker Hall. He's this well-dressed kind of guy. He's got to be successful. He feels like he's the guy that walks in a room and kind of owns a room. Mm-hmm. But he walks to this restaurant, and outside is
pretty much a desolate John C. Reilly.
He's like... hanging out front. He's not necessarily begging for money, but almost seems like he is. But he says, you know, do you want to come in?
I'll buy
you a cup of coffee and a cigarette. And, you know, come talk with me. And he says, sure. He goes in and talks and pretty much says that, you know, I came to Vegas. My mother died. I need $6,000 for a funeral. I got pretty much no money left. And Hall's like, well, I can't really help you with the funeral, but here's what I can do. What would you do if I gave you $50? And he's like, I don't know, get a room and a meal. And he's like, you come to Vegas with me and I'll show you how to get that. And he says, like,
he doesn't have a grift.
He thinks he thinks he's trying to get him like a sexual for sexual.
Yeah, John C. Reilly and Philip Baker Hall and those first scenes are in fucking incredible. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank God, PTA figured out how good
John C. Reilly is. Right?
John C. Reilly or Hoffman, but I think those guys would have been figured out. It's Hall.
Yeah.
Like, Hall had this career that probably made him enough money to live. Mm-hmm. He gets some fucking unbelievable roles in his pictures. Mm-hmm. And he's incredible in this movie.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, this is his show, right? Like,
but he pretty much takes him to Vegas, and he shows him kind of the tricks to, like...
make it look like you're
pretty
big
much
shot.
Start off with the $50 and, yeah, exactly, end up getting a free meal in the free room like he promises.
So my grandfather used to do this.
Oh, yeah?
So he... and I guess eventually he gave it up after being with my grandfather isn't my blood-related grandfather, but he's the only guy I ever knew. Mm-hmm. And him and my grandmother met in probably the late...
say Vegas?
Like 80 or something like that, just before I was born. And they had this amazing thing. And he would go to Vegas but before and then for many years after. And he always... the story was he didn't pay for his room. He didn't pay for his food. Hmm. Because he knew... that he could show. He taught me how to play blackjack. And I was not very good at blackjack, but he would always beat me. And he would beat me at every card game. He knew how to pretend to be a great card player, even though he said, I usually would make some money, but I wasn't... sometimes I'd lose some money, but he would go there and knew all the tricks to get all these free shit. Hmm. So for decades, it sounded like... or like probably a couple decades, he would go to Vegas...
on the arm.
He just had to pay his flight.
Nice.
and usually would come back. He told me he would come back with enough to pay for the flight.
See, like that's when Vegas was charming, right?
Yeah, I've never been to Vegas, but I
you probably wouldn't be able to get away with it these days with the cameras.
You
can
get a
right?
free bar. I used to get free drinks when I'm in Vegas, but that's pretty much
they,
all.
They
I
would
can
see
do.
That this guy's going back and forth and cashing in constantly these days. I bet.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, this works out for him. We cut to 2 years later. Now he's almost like a father figure to him. We get introduced to Gwyneth Paltrow, who is a cocktail waitress at the
also
casino.
Great in this.
Also, but she's prostituting at night. You have Sam Jackson, who's kind of the... He's kind of the schemey... he's a security guy, but he's kind of got some kind of criminal side to him. I don't really know if I want to say too much else, because I think what I enjoyed about this film was I didn't know... This movie, you don't know where it's going. It keeps on like almost changing genres.
It really does, right?
It's this, and then it's like, oh wait, now it's got into this. And it's throwing all these twists and like, yeah, I really dug it.
There is one glorious scene where it's Philip Seymour Hoffman,
yeah.
And he is like this hot shot guy at the, he's playing craps.
Craps,
right?
yeah.
And like, he is just barking at like a Hall. Like, and it's such a good back and forth between the two.
Well, so Phil Hall doesn't say anything. It's just, he's calling the old man.
He can't get, like, he can't find purchase with his feet because he can't go at him.
Yeah.
He just kinda...
Well, the film, everyone's always trying to get this hard eight, which I guess is two fours, right?
Yeah, you got it.
But yeah, I'm not sure if it all worked for me, but I still think, like, this is Paul PTA's debut film. Like, that's crazy that he was able to do that.
I just thought of this. Is this the secret to being, other than being just like a fucking genius when it comes to film? But it's a secret to getting off the ground. So you think about, like, how the fuck do you make a movie with this person, this person? Well, if you really think about all of these people at the time, no one's huge. Like,
Sam Jackson is coming off of Pulp Fiction.
But has he shot? Is it released yet when he shot it?
I think it's 2 years before, so probably.
If 94, this is 95, right?
This is 96. I think Pulp Fiction's 94.
Right, but this had a weird release. So you probably had to secure Sam Jackson...
Yeah.
Like, either it had just come out or whatever.
Yeah, like...
It was about to come out or something.
He might not have been as big when he's filming this, I guess.
Like, you're definitely getting... You're realizing, like, oh, this is an up-and-coming guy. You figure out that Hall is incredible. You find John C. Reilly. Philip Seymour Hoffman gets a fucking... just shoot, like to the moon in that one scene. Gwyneth Paltrow's done nothing.
Yeah.
Is that the secret to becoming huge? Like, other than having a great script, but like...
Yeah. I don't know, though. Like, that, I think that takes a lot. Like, I think that's a lot on him that he's able to get these performances out of these people. Like,
totally.
Another director might not have been able to get those performances.
But all of these people get, like, without this movie, they all do well. This movie doesn't break, maybe other than Hall, it doesn't break anybody that much. Like, John C. Reilly probably gets more out of doing Boogie Nights, for sure.
Yeah.
And so does Philip Seymour Hall.
Everyone else kind of, like, upgraded with that, right? Like,
Baker Hall. It's interesting, though. Like, how do you get... He didn't go to film school. He done some shorts. You had to prove it, right? So you... I'm always fascinated with this story, like, the Coen brothers making Blood Simple. There's real actors in Blood Simple. But they funded it in all these fucking other ways. But they found the real actors that maybe had one more gear in them that they never were able to give. Is that the secret?
I think that might be it, right? Like,
you have to get it out of them. You're right, Kyle.
I think a good script, too, helps. I mean, I think if you get a bunch of actors and they all believe in the script, and then you have a director, and he's his new director, but you probably see early on, no, this guy knows what he's doing. I think you get
there's
the confidence too,
even
right?
Even like finding gems, like in a sea of hay, you got to find that one needle. Like, even they see a script's like, oh, that needle, yes. In a sea of actors, like, find that one needle in the haystack kind of deal. Like, that's probably what it is. And just sometimes you have 12 haystacks and you got to find 10
it's
needles.
It's like sometimes I see a character actor, and maybe Steven Root is an example of where I saw him 20 years ago and I was like,
that guy.
Give him money. Like,
what was your introduction? News Radio?
I think it was...
Crocodile Dundee?
No, it was News Radio, and then it was Office Space.
Yeah.
And he's... I saw them at the same time, and I went, how is that dude doing both of this? Like, I just thought, like, if... But if I was to make a movie, like like I'm PTA right now, I should probably give Steven Root the lead.
Yeah.
Right? Like, or someone like him.
Yeah.
Maybe he's too big. Maybe you need to go.
Yeah.
But he's never had a lead. Or that I know of.
Yeah.
I had to look up who you guys were talking about, but I know you.
Yeah.
Steven Root's incredible. Like he's in all those Coen Brothers movies. He kills it. So you're probably having to search, like, Phil Baker Hall, unless there's something I'm not clocking, it was much more obscure at the time. So you're probably needing that. John C. Reilly is a nobody.
Yeah.
It's like picking Michael Shannon in Groundhog Day.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like,
hey, what are you going to give it?
8 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, nice. I think that's what I gave it to. Yeah, it's great. Oh, it, what? It's a maniac.
It's a maniac.
It's
yeah,
a maniac.
Yeah.
There we go.
All right.
a secret maniac over like 4 years.
Yeah, it works.
What else you guys got?
That's it for me.
I got one more. I watched a really interesting movie, which isn't...
That was Heart 8, by the way.
Huh? Heart 8, yeah. It's
Heart
not,
8 got an 8.
Hey, got a Heart 8. Double fours, baby.
We just need somebody else to do that, and then we'll combine ourselves and clone ourselves, and then we'll be good. On the Bowery. So this is like... I called it Bloody Your Nose, Empty Your Pockets. Have you seen Bloody Nose, Empty Pockets
what
yet?
What are that movies that, like, I have to see this? But the time is never...
I got. I'm just going to send you home with this.
Yeah, yeah. It's still on Canopy, I believe, right?
It is also on. Like, that is the most fucking Maddie movie.
I know. I've been meaning to watch this for
ages.
Have
you watched this?
No, I did. I did buy. I picked it up though. I someone saw it with the sweet limited slipcover and that kind
of. Oh yeah.
Sold me on it, but you know, you made it sound interesting. It does seem like it's like this is Maddie's film.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, like so this is a film on the Bowery in the 50s, and it's similar where it's real people, but some of it has been like it's a script, somewhat. But most of the interaction, most conversations are
the Bowery boys
are just about these guys. So guys that work on the rail lines, guys that hold these like little jobs doing construction, dishwashing, whatever. But they're basically all fucking drunks, and they're alcoholics. It's hard, more hardcore than Bloody or Empty Bloody Pockets.
I assume, like, does it take place in New York?
This is New York on the Bowery.
Yeah.
When the Bowery was the worst place to live in the world.
I assume these guys are hard-living fellas.
Hard-living fellas. But, like, some of the interactions they have are just incredible. Like, you could never write a movie about some of the stuff that happens in here. Because it's just these guys that are living this life, and it's a fucking hard life, but it's about one of the main guy who I guess he was offered roles in Hollywood after, and he said, "I just want to be left alone. There's nothing else in life but the booze." just like crazy.
That's impressive. Hey, a man's got to have a code.
So that's the guy that's the lead, the hero in this, that's trying to struggle with alcohol. And I do find some of the exposition or where they're trying to set up some of the scenes just don't work for me. It's like very stagey. I wish it was just more lived in, like, Empty Pockets, Bloody Nose, which I adore. And I feel like that – I think I might want to watch that on New Year's Day this year, which seems a little dicey. But I just feel like that other movie, which it stuck with me. I think I undervalued it because it was so unique and natural. This one I'm still going to give a 7. It's well worth the watch, even though I think it has limitations. Also, it's shot by like it's got a
handheld camera.
I don't know how they did this. It's got to be shoestring. I guess this guy did. Lionel Rogenson did a lot of documentaries. I've never seen any of his other work, but he's got a sense for space and where the camera should be placed to capture these unbelievable moments.
Awesome.
Sorry, what did you give it? Did I miss that?
A 7.
7. Okay.
Is it On the Bowery?
I got one more attend on. It is a noir. I think this one's pretty well regarded. For 1953, 99 River Street. I don't know if you saw this one, Adam.
No, I've never seen this.
It's directed by Phil Carlston.
Oh, yeah, I've
John
seen.
John Payne from
Scandal.
Miracle on 34th Street and Evelyn Keyes from Gone with the Wind, I guess. So, yeah, it opens up. Payne's this boxer. He's going to be this big-time boxer, but he gets an injury on his eye, severe eye injury, and has to retire. And now he's a cab driver. He's got dreams to, you know, maybe one day open up a gas station. His wife is one of those luxurious wives. She she married him for the fame, and now that's not working out. So she's, you know, she's not happy that she has to give up everything, you know, for a cabbie. And then you have Keys plays this actress. She's a kind of a friend of Payne. You know, he's given her like the free cab ride, you know, pay me back when you make it, kind of thing. And then it kind of all gets kind of complicated. So there's a lot going on the first like third of the film. You find out his wife is two-timing him with this criminal. This criminal did this heist job, but then when he goes to get paid, the guy's like, you brought a woman in this, I'm not paying you, all this kind of stuff. Keys, there's this other plot where she went to this casting call and the guy tried to put the moves on her and he accidentally died. Like, it's almost like too complicated.
There's a lot going on.
And I'm not necessarily digging it. It's almost like too much and I'm not really... But then it all... At the midpoint, or maybe before the midpoint, it all kind of connects and you see where it's going and it makes sense. And now Payne is like kind of becoming this detective role. I'll just say he's framed for a murder. He has to solve it. Keys is teaming up with him. And he's kind of like this, he's a boxer. So he's going around, he's punching
knocking
guys.
People out.
I really dug it once it kicked in and you see where it all connects. Because at first I'm like, I'm not really feeling any of these characters and it's almost like too much. And like, who am I supposed to care about or follow? It all does pay off in the end. Again, I struggle with the first, but I like a lot of these noirs this month, I just haven't found that one to really hit out of the park. I'm going to give it 7.5 out of 10, just shy there. But I know a lot of people really do like this one.
This is Kansas City Confidential director as well.
Okay.
And Scandal Sheet, which was a fuller script that I really, really
Yeah, so some people talk highly of this one, so it might be worth watching. There's definitely a lot to like it. 99 River Street.
Honestly, I've never heard of this movie.
Okay. I think Kino put it out, and I don't know if it was going out of print or something. Somehow, like, I heard, like, this is one of their ones to check out, because they've put out, like, fucking 150 noirs. It's kind of hard at this point. I think box sets, they've been putting out these box sets where you get three or four films. I think they're on volume 15 now.
Yeah.
Like, even Scandal Sheet, which I only watched because it was part of that Fuller series. Mm-hmm. I never heard of that.
Yeah.
It was really good.
I have like, Becky got me for Christmas one year the Noir Encyclopedia.
Oh, that's
it's like
cool.
It's the size of a thick Bible, and it's like 1,000 noir films. Like, I didn't realize there was that many. There's like, I'm never gonna see them all before I die. Like, it's a huge. Again, I don't want to.
Because we're going to kill him now.
This is it.
Anyways, I guess if that's it, are we going to jump into...
Yeah, let's do Touch of Evil. Yeah.
Here's the trailer from 1958 for Orson Welles' Touch of Evil.
This was her wedding night. Where was the man she had married? Who were these hoodlums?
Older legs.
This outstanding cast: Charlton Heston, Janet Leigh.
I could love being corny if my husband would only cooperate.
Orson Welles, co-starring Joseph Kalea, Akim Tamirov, with guest stars Marlena Dietrich, Zsa Zsa Gabor.
What are you trying to do?
We're trying to strap you in the electric chair, boy.
Only the offbeat, original, creative powers of Orson Welles could bring you so suspenseful, so gripping, so different a drama of love threatened by vengeance.
Mike may be spoiling some of your fun.
Mike?
My husband, yeah. And if you're trying to scare me into calling him off, let me tell you something, Mr. Grandy. I may be scared, but he won't be.
Of a struggle between titans.
You framed that boy.
Framed him!
Of a manhunt like nothing you've ever experienced.
What did you do with her? Where is my wife? My wife!
Mm-hmm.
When a car bomb explodes on the American side at the U.S.-Mexico border, Mexican Drug Enforcement Agent Miguel Vargas begins his investigation along with American police captain Hank Quinlan. When Vargas begins to suspect that Quinlan and his shady partner Menzies are planting evidence to frame an innocent man, his investigations into their possible corruption quickly put himself and his new bride, Susie, in jeopardy. Yes, we're talking about Orson Welles, 1958, Touch of Evil. I guess I thought he did more noirs, but he just did The Stranger. Like, he starred in other ones. But for some reason, I thought he directed Lady of Shanghai, but I think...
No, Lady Shanghai is him as well.
Is him?
Yeah.
Okay.
So those are the three.
Was The Stranger the one in the clock tower?
Yeah.
I've never seen that one.
I really dug that one.
Yeah, like, Welles is such a...
Does he act in most of his movies?
Not all. I think there's...
So he directed by Lady Shanghai, but he's uncredited for it.
Oh, in some weird way.
Yeah, because when I was looking up, I'm like, I thought he directed it, and then it's like his name wasn't coming up. And I guess there's some weird thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
This is Welles. Unfortunately, Welles is probably the most innovative, forward-thinking director of his era.
Did you say unfortunately?
Yeah, because he was also... discredited at every account from anybody that actually had the power of giving him money. Also, he didn't often care. He got bored so quickly about making these movies.
Okay, so he
he would move off to one other thing, and he made the big fatal error in this one of actually being super engaged, making the movie, finishing the movie, editing half of it, and then going to Mexico to do Don Quixote. Because he was always off to the next thing.
Next thing. And...
I think this might be the most personal, in terms of who Welles is, movie because of his character in this. And what's underlying in that, like that fucking ego that just won't stop. But you're also that brilliant.
It's that bum leg of his that really keeps it it afloat.
So, but that's him. Like, this is his last American picture. This is the last time he gets a real budget without having to go beg for it.
When's the last time you guys watched Citizen Kane?
Recently, actually.
Yeah. Okay. I feel, actually, this is a conversation off mic. Yeah, well, we'll do this later because I want to talk about something. But
Citizen Kane's fucking incredible.
It's so good.
I know some people think it's so
precise
with
what happened with the 2016 election. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh yeah.
It seems so like a almost like a cosmic force is watching us and laughing at us. Like, oh, Citizen Kane's your favorite movie? All right, see how much you like when it's playing out in front of you. Like, it's insane how many. Parallels are drawn.
It's the only movie that's probably that he got to make without compromise or without budget restrictions ever. And he's 24.
But I thought he had to fight a lot during the making of that one.
Yes, but he
ended up getting his,
Well, he got his way because of his contract. Yeah. So at that point, he was such hot shit from doing all the radio stuff, from doing the Mercury Theater stuff. The contracts that everybody was willing to offer him were basically final cut. He never got that again. Magnificent Amberson, which I love as well, is a somewhat because it's still brilliant flawed picture because you never get to see his picture. Yeah. He went away again. You don't get that movie, and then he kind of floats for the rest of his career in making really good movies, but also. Not ever getting to decide how his movies would be presented. And this we talked at the beginning of the show, we don't need to go over and all the cuts again, but this is that movie as well. Like the difference with this one and compared to maybe some others, he gets pretty damn close to finishing this and the differences are minor. So the difference, the main difference between the restoration cut and the normal cut we're seeing. So basically, Kyle gave the overview of what's happening, but you have this newlywed married couple, and it in the original cut it shows Heston as the lead. You get his whole story, and then you get Janet Leigh's, and it changes the perspective of what's going on. And there's actually a great the editor that ended up doing the restoration cut realized like. how precise he was in terms of he wanted this to be both about the separation of these two people. Well, if you're separating in the beginning, you never feel like they're together.
Yeah.
And the other aspect that he found that was mainly changed was that opening sequence where you have not a score in big title cards. You basically just get to live in this moment.
Which that opening might be one of my
favorite parts. Yeah, of this scene is like it's like a one shot, and you see like it starts off. They
might
throw
be the greatest
wonder
of all time. Like it's in unbelievable.
Which is the way the sound plays too. Like
there's
as you're
a tension, but
thing.
It doesn't feel like there's a tension. This car is like driving. You see it follows around the streets, and these couple
you feel like you're
walking
you're there.
Yeah,
time on the streets.
It's amazing. Yeah,
and
it also feels like so ahead of its time. I think. The directing in this, there's a lot of stuff that feels way ahead of its time.
Maybe
again, if you said show me a bunch of movies that came out that year, I would be mistaken. But for me, like watching,
I don't
it
think
it just feels
that,
like
that one shot.
Modern
at the beginning.
Almost.
There was a shitty movie I watched for 2007, Dead Silence, where like this is a great shot of like him going through like a parking alley, kicking ass in a parking alley. Death Sentence. And this scene is way better as a one shot where you're just following. The street.
Well, we've talked about this on the podcast a lot. Like, I have a resistance against oneers because I find they're usually show-offy and there's not a real purpose to it. This has a real purpose.
It really does, right? You just see,
So it
how alive these
so it opens
are.
Up and the big change is then you get to follow and there's intercutting what the husband is trying to figure out with this bomb explosion. He meets Wells's character, and goddamn. Orson Welles is incredible
this
in this movie.
Vargas.
And I get like Orson Welles is at this point like so he's Quinlan is this massive man, and he's shot in all these kind of weird cantered shots, so he looks even bigger. And what's kind of sad is eventually Welles is this big.
Mm-hmm.
He's using padding, like he's not actually this big.
They shoot him from the chin up. I was like the chin jowls.
He's basically our age.
Yeah,
like he's a little bit older than the three of us, but he's basically our age in this movie.
I didn't even realize that was all. I thought that he was actually that big at the time.
Yeah, I thought so too. Like you can't even tell, right?
Like, yeah, like he can't.
Really well.
Yeah, he's not quite there. It's a precursor.
Even like his labored talking, like his labored breathing is.
Well, he's also an alcoholic in the movie too.
He's a recovered alcoholic.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So this is one great scene. They make a point of showing like he hasn't had a drink in what 12 years, and like as he's like chatting, he's not even like he's unaware what he's doing. He just has like a quick.
Kicks
one back, and like that opens up this fucking can of worms. Like there's a few scenes in movies that like when they have a drink, like oh, it's on now. The other scene I can think of is in Untouchable, where he starts like drinking. There's two scenes, where you can see like someone just taking that one drink to open up,
and it changes everything.
You got it, man.
Yeah,
and even like when he was like, he's not touching it. Then he touches like you're like. Your heart sings like, no, don't do it, man. Don't do it. And
but
like,
it's subtle. So... Like they don't show it until Uncle Joe comes
back. Can I get you another one? He's like, no, I don't drink. And then he's like
sitting
at like a...
And there's a million of these moments. I finished the movie and I thought, do I have time to just like start fucking like breaking this shit down? I think Heston and Janet Leigh are great in this, but I think Wells is on another level, and he's the villain who you're supposed to see him as despicable, but his motivation is...
Is he a villain? Like, he is villainous. I'll give him that, but like, is he a villain? Like, I don't
He thinks he's doing
know.
The right thing, and he's often... He's proven in the end that he was through...
What kind of a
man
are they going to say he was? Doesn't matter. He was a man. He's going to say whatever I think.
Yeah, like, well, Marlena Dietrich, who plays a fortune teller in this,
an ex-paramour of...
Quinlan, of Wells' character, who used to, when he was drinking, would go to her place on the other side of the border.
Yeah, and just drink for like 4 days straight and listen to that player piano.
And she has a film star, like, you get a film star like Marlene Dietrich in your movie, and she's just there for a moment, and she might have the two best line readings of the whole goddamn movie.
She says maybe four sentences in this movie.
And they're all incredible. Yeah. And I don't know, like, the stuff that's happening... So we're forgetting about the two lead characters. The stuff that's happening... Charlton Heston is such a dog for figuring out the corruption and what's going on. He leaves his wife. We forgot that second half of the story is basically like he's putting this, it's like pre-cartel guys in jail, and they've decided like to terrorize him and his wife, except he just leaves his wife in a seedy motel.
He doesn't realize that the hotel is owned by them.
He does not care about his wife whatsoever in this movie. That's my problem with this movie.
Every time it's like, oh, yeah, I'll phone her later.
Yeah,
I'll
phone her later. Yeah.
But I think he...
I guess he does think she just went to a regular hotel and she's sleeping or something.
Yeah, he's.
Right?
I think it's like a total just common sexist kind of thing where it's like, yeah, my wife's fine. She went to a hotel. I don't have to worry. I'm doing my job, but my job is the most important thing in the world. I am Miguel Vargas, and I will take out all corruption.
And even her, like, the decisions she makes are so, like, what are you doing? Why are you following this random dude in the street to a hotel? Like,
That's a totally Big Sleep thing. That's, the minute I saw that, I was like, Dad!
Like, this area is supposed to all be like the shady.
Yeah, of course. It's like the border.
It is kind of weird that he's.
So, why are they on their honeymoon there in the first place?
Weren't they going through it?
No.
Okay.
This is their honeymoon. They're staying there. That's their big. Like, again.
Going to America.
Yes. But she's from America. Well,
because it's the first time we've been on
a lot
land
of people
together.
Go to, like, Mexico for their honeymoon.
They live in Mexico City.
Yeah.
So,
but that's, I mean, I could see it kind of being like maybe they're just going over the border to, like, Niagara Falls type.
They're not. Like, it's a Mexico border. And
oh, yeah. I guess, yeah. Sorry. That's.
No one wants to go to U.S. Niagara Falls, anyways, either, right? Like, border towns. There's charm, but
honeymoon
there's
problems. Honeymoon in Vegas
there.
Is kind of awesome, though.
Vegas.
Niagara Falls. It's the Vegas of Ontario.
Oh, yes. But if you dive deep into the motivations of some of that, but I get his motivation. Like, his motivation is that he is this guy that has just fucking beaten down corruption in a world that doesn't, and he's been successful. And he sees this in another way of doing that, and he takes it personal. And then it's another level of when his wife gets involved. And honestly, that's some seedy shit that ends up happening to her.
Because it starts off almost innocently. How she just kind of goes to this, like, not motel, but like the bar. Like, what's going on here? Like,
and she
just follows him so, like,
pre-Anthony Perkins.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even realize that.
No, it's not Anthony Perkins, but like supposedly there was like some elements taken from this characterization of the motel clerk for him.
Hmm. Oh, that makes sense because I really didn't like this character.
Yeah, you're not like he's the most aggressively like
cartoonish character. Like the scenes in the hotel really bugged me.
Yeah,
everything about this, like, even when they're like, when the bad shit's happening to her with this, like, cool jazz upbeat music playing, like, I didn't like that.
To be honest, I that's kind of the problems I had with this film. Is there's a lot of stuff that just bugs me, and I know it's supposed to be one of those films, but there's just like, I was just like so annoyed with the stuff there and what's going on, and then like. The corruption, I know that's what you're supposed to feel, but it's just, like, really annoying. Like, it just seemed like two helpless people, and sure, maybe in the end it works out, but it's just two helpless people and just, you know, bad people in control of the whole
thing. Yeah, it doesn't work out in the end, though, either. Right, like, it...
But you find out that they didn't actually, like, it seemed like they were gonna... They did a lot more to her, but you find out that they didn't actually do anything.
Yeah, they really had to, like...
That also is like a...
That almost seemed like a way to get out of away the code thing. But yeah, it's still, though, you got to go by what does happen in the movie.
But you could also just take that as we didn't give her that drug.
No, but I thought the one guy said, like, she has nothing to worry about. They didn't do anything to her. They just made her think that they did terrible things.
Hold her legs. This isn't going to be pleasant for her. Like, there was like
the needle, right?
Yeah.
They did give her a needle. They just didn't give her the actual drug.
Yeah, but... I don't think Uncle Joe knows everything that's happening with those fucking delinquents either. Mm-hmm. So I think there's enough wiggle room. Like, I take it that, I guess it's been like three or four episodes. She was raped.
Yeah.
Like, they're not following his
orders.
So I don't think I took it that way. Because I think the way it plays out with Wells' partner and the conversation with Heston, and even the way it ends, it just, I don't know.
Wells doesn't know anything. Heston doesn't know anything. Uncle Joe doesn't know anything.
No, but I know, but that's what I'm saying. The way it all plays out, though, where the one guy says, hey, I talked to this guy. This is, don't worry. You don't have, it, oh, none of was, that actually was, happened about. Like, he talks to one of the guys that was involved in there. Sure, you could argue he's lying, but I think they play it out like, okay, it's not as bad as you thought.
Happily
it's
ever happy. After.
Yeah, like, the guy's saying, oh, they only give her this drug. They didn't fucking give her heroin.
No, but they says, like, you don't have to, he pretty much says nothing happened to her, because he's trying to, like, get him to forget about this whole thing that,
I guess,
don't worry, nothing
Saul's
technically
kind of like
happened to you.
Yeah, it's a truth serum that they give her instead. Anyways, either way,
this,
massively traumatized.
Yeah. This isn't like I'm fine now.
No,
everything's normal. Like,
no,
that,
you're never
gonna
be back to normal. Like, yes, this movie doesn't try to play the fucking easy
card.
I was
thinking about this. No. Even
for its time, it must have been like fucking shocking. I mean, maybe some of the shit was the stuff.
Well,
they
did a little bit.
If they could elongate this movie by 30 minutes. And it would be a completely different ending. Even that, like, I don't know if there's spoilers, but there is, like, evidence against the villain in this. That's like, that could be misconstrued in any lawyer.
Well, without spoiling too much, does it ever actually solve who did the...
Yes.
Did it?
Yeah, because it kind of says, like...
it doesn't solve it. It tells the person that did the bomb says he confesses.
Oh, okay. I missed that.
So,
and now they talk about, like, what kind of a man do they say he was? They say he was a man.
It's all about the bigger picture.
It seems like,
characters.
That story is almost forgotten about. It's more about that this guy's a shady cop. Wells is a shady cop.
Yeah, so that's the movie.
But that being said, he was never... Okay, we as an audience know he was a shady cop, but the actual audience in Mexico, or I guess in America at large, that recording could have been anything. He could still be considered a hero.
Quinlan, Wells' character, starts mentioning that while he's fucking so drunk. He knows he probably can get off all of this.
Yeah.
But he's too fucked up, and he's too upset that he's been betrayed and all of these
other
elements.
Yeah, he gives up that he talks on the tape that he planted evidence.
He never actually, like, incriminates himself.
No, he
on
does.
This.
He just says, though, but those people were probably guilty.
But again, like, that's a gray line. Yeah. If you have a good lawyer,
conjuncture.
To be honest, I think the problem I have is Heston's. Like, the whole reason that the Wells' partner gets afraid is Heston is like, these people, all he says is, you guys happen to find the evidence on all these people, which means that, like, he doesn't actually have any real evidence against them, and all of a sudden the guy's freaked out.
It's like a multitude of the same circumstance happening over and over and over again, where no one has got any other evidence on these people, and all of a sudden they've found this evidence. It's going to look bad, and that guy knows too. It's really playing to his sympathies, like. Well, do I really see this stuff?
Yeah.
Like, the only reason he ever believed Quinlan is
because
he took
saved
that
his
shot.
Life.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, like, this is all. This isn't why it's, in my opinion, a great picture. It's a great picture because of all the extremities that is happening, and like that sequence at the end where Heston is taping what the conversation between. Wells' character and his partner is one of the most, that might be more interesting than the beginning sequence in this film, and how it's shot and how he's having to do things and the angles and stuff and seeing people in the background.
Yeah, I guess back then you have to be close if to the
because he has the antenna and shit like that.
And but it's also just like, oh, where are they? Then you see they'll see something out of the corner and then oh, now he's above and what's going on? Like the spatial elements are just brilliant. I guess Bogdanovich talked about it like, and Wells took offense to this. He was like, I didn't care about the plot the first four or five times I watched this.
I think that's my problem with it. Yeah. I think the direction is on a whole other level. It's amazing. I think Wells' performance, Wells' performance, his direction, make the movie. It's everything else I didn't care about. Like, Heston didn't care about Janet Leigh didn't really care about her story.
You don't care about the relationship whatsoever.
But I think they have, like, I feel like they're, I don't know if they're in love. They're in lust.
Couple,
like, they're fucking into each other, though.
But there's also another scene when they are driving, I guess, through Mexico City. They are clearly driving through Mexico City at breakneck speeds, because even in the background,
they're never in Mexico City. They're just always in border towns.
Not Mexico City, a Mexican city.
Are you talking about like in the desert?
No, him and his the partner that he kind of hooks up with in America, Heston, and I forget the other guy's name. It's not Menzi, but the other fella.
Oh,
with the glasses.
Schmidt or whatever. Yeah,
and they're driving just through alleys.
Yeah, yeah,
and like. And people are like coming out of their houses. See, why are these people driving so fast down this alley? Like, it is insane.
But they also knock someone off in that scene. Yeah. So someone is in the street and they show them getting fucking flung from the car.
Clearly, they are driving through breakneck speed. So this, like,
I think that they had it all blocked off. It's probably I don't think in the 50s.
I don't know, because as you see that, I was watching, like, that's interesting. Then you see the background, people are actually coming out of the house, like, what the fuck was that? Like, you see people kind of like watching them from.
There is one shot in this movie that I saw, like, someone gets hit by the car.
Oh yeah, no, this was not, 'cause they were driving. Like,
yeah, they're driving
fast.
Yeah, like, they're driving fast, and the guy gets fucking knocked to shit, and I was like. Yeah. That's a great stunt. Like, I didn't think it wasn't a stunt, but...
That's a good stunt. They've paid off, like, as a stunt driver, yeah. So, they're clearly... He knows how to make a film.
That's the unfortunate thing, and many people have said this, is and many of his contemporaries, that he was the greatest... Like, they believed he was the greatest director. Robert Wise talks about it, the Haunting and West Side Story director.
Robert Wise.
No one had what he had, but he didn't. He also had this hubris, and I may like this more because I'm such a Wells fan as well. Because I think there is like parallels between him and his character and what's going on. But it's also,
it's justify the means, kind of.
I just fucking get charged by this fucking movie. Like, I hadn't watched this one in a while, and I kind of put it on my noir list, but I hadn't kind of really known. I remember the ending, and I remember the beginning, and I remember some other sequences.
I do feel this movie is a bit disjointed, especially with the hotel scenes. I just like, I didn't like...
The only thing I don't really like is the overlapping dialogue. That's really my main complaint about the movie, is they had to reshoot a bunch of the dialogue later for sound issues, so it almost becomes like an Italian picture. I don't know if you noticed, like, occasionally the dialogue doesn't match.
No, I didn't
even
clock that, no.
That occasionally is the thing that, like, it happens with those amazing Leone films a little bit as well, where I kind of go,
I get used to it. So what are you guys giving this movie?
I'm going to give it 9. I love this movie.
Ratty.
Sorry, guys.
Oh, no.
7.5 again.
Okay.
I haven't given it any score yet.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. Again, like, this film drove me nuts at times, just like the decisions that they make and just how it plays out. Things just bothered me. I love Wells, though.
I think both Janet Leigh and Charlton Heston are supposed to drive you crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those films where I'm just, I'm just fucking fuck, man, for like an hour and 50 minutes.
You thought it was a porn movie?
Yeah.
This guy, Charles Heston, Lee, just fucking fuck, guys, all right?
Yeah, you're in a hotel.
You're in Mexico City.
And again, I'm sure they're supposed to do, this film's supposed to make you feel that way, but films like this drive me crazy where it's like, almost like one of those films where, you know, the kid's doing them and getting away with it, but the other kid's getting blamed the whole movie and you have to wait to the final last 5 minutes before the kid finally gets his comeuppance. It's one of those films like
that. See, I just don't feel at the end it all gets wrapped up, and that's what makes it for me.
It does not get wrapped up.
You feel like, oh, yes, that's right.
It's literally like them in the car and they're hugging and saying, don't worry.
But they don't know the future. Like, because there's lines that are said before.
Just got back together after 24 hours of accosting in a hotel room, being arrested. Like,
it's never going to be right. Like,
no, the minute you see.
She's on fucking truth serum. But, like.
Yeah.
It's a phony, like the whole thing is phony in a way, even though they have this sexual charge with one another. Mm-hmm. Maddie?
I'm giving it 8. Yeah, I dug this movie. I got to ask, this is going to be a hard one for me. I don't know how to dissect these movies from like 1 to 4. All right, well.
For me, Maltese Falcon on a whole other level.
Okay.
Then I'm going to go Nightmare Alley. And then Touch of Evil, and then The Killers.
I'm going to go Touch of Evil, Maltese Falcon.
Oh, I thought you liked The Killers better than Maltese.
No, these three are, if we're doing top 100, they're all in the conversation. Mm. Like, I do think Touch of Evil is maybe like a little step above all these other ones. And then Killers, and then Nightmare.
I have a hard time because I can't.
Yeah, like
I can't pick. They're all like if you ask me right now, I'd be like Nightmare Alley.
I thought you gave Nightmare Alley your lowest rating. Did
no,
you?
No, 8.
You gave that an 8?
Eight. Yeah, I gave them all 8s. I think.
Yeah,
I think 8 across the boards for these fellas. Yeah, I think Nightmare Alley. I Touch of Evil. Like I think The Killers. I dug too. Maltese Falcon. Like I think that might be the way to go.
Yeah.
But like. They could change upon second viewing.
I think, in my opinion, these are all really strong
films. I feel Maltese Falcon was really like this is the movie. You got to watch this. I'm like, okay.
It's
good, but it's not.
I think it starts the noir.
For me, the Maltese Falcon is probably my favorite noir.
Yeah. Maybe that's why it kind of got in my head like this movie should have been better.
So I thought Big Sleep might have been yours before.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, you're right. It might be Big Sleep. I think it was Maltese Falcon, and then I think Big Sleep took it.
I think that was maybe a 2 year. Was it 2 years ago we did Big Sleep? But that might have been a 2 years ago conversation.
Wasn't with the hot coffee in the face, the heat, the big heat.
No, that's the
white
the big heat. The big heat.
Which I really like that one too.
Yeah.
Again, I like the either the fast talking detectives or like the badass detectives.
The problem is.
I don't think any of these
have very similar names,
that outside of
right?
Maltese Falcon.
The Big Sleep, the White Heat, White Rage.
Yeah, I've thought about like I think I had maybe a Touch of Evil a little bit lower on my list. Maybe it's, but I've like the top 10 noirs. There's no chance they don't make my top 100. They're also not all just like they're deeper than that in some cases. Like, is Touch of Evil, which is considered like noir, there's a lot of other elements. Like, I talked about Psycho or like, there's
going in there.
Webs that are
when
going to all these
walks
places.
In and he's like walking across a window, like, oh, that's one of the and like, oh no, it's just like a weird Norman Bates fella who the Nightman.
Anyways, you know, noir number 3 for us.
I think this was our third time doing it.
Listen, if you got any recommendations for the next Noirvember, not January, Noirvember.
You always want to do January,
because it just makes more sense. Fuck it.
Maybe we don't have to like watch 350 movies in Shocktober Noir.
Which is January.
Will be like,
January.
Yeah.
Maybe the next 2025.
We did Jaluari.
That just seems like a mouthful. Like,
what are you going to make Jal?
January makes way more sense than Noir-vember. It doesn't flow from the mouth.
January? I don't think I can even say
January.
That. January. Nori?
January.
Yeah, I struggle with that one.
Oh, fair enough.
January.
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 Noir-vember.
It just sounds weird having it in the middle there.
I think Noir-vember is a little bit easier.
I think you got to say it. You got to have it at the beginning or the end.
You can either do... we'll talk about this because our next episode is Christmas. So we can either do like Yagnog or Nagermeister. Yagnog makes sense. Jagermeister does not. If you want to email us any January recommendations... You can email us at moviecitymaniacs@gmail.com.
And we're on Instagram at moviecitymaniacs.
And Facebook, just search Movie City Maniacs. We have a like page, group page. All right, that's guys. It, guys.
Stay scared.